SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevepick.com. Here it is, your Tuesday before Thanksgiving. We'll be away tomorrow and Thursday and then come back Friday for the big holiday weekend of racing, which should be spectacular. Things kicked off a little bit last night, yesterday, at Mahoning Valley. If you saw those races, they were good. They were really good. The Steel Valley and the Mahoning Distaff. I'll get to those results momentarily. Things continue tonight, today. Penn National. They always have this spot on the calendar, and then into the real teeth of the Thanksgiving action. Thursday, New York, as well as Churchill. Opening day at Fairgrounds. We're going to talk to Marcus Hirsch. We'll get the season opener and the season advance work done with Marcus. Tampa opens tomorrow amidst all the other action. And we'll be anxious to see the draws for Saturday's card around the ovals, really everywhere. The Del Mar now, particularly stacked up with the turf stakes for Saturday and Sunday as they wind down. Churchill for the two-year-old card with the Jockey Club and the Goldenrod. It's going to be, this is always one of my favorite 4 or 5 days. You got, like Johnny talked about yesterday, and how great was Johnny? It never disappoints. It really doesn't. Johnny, John, you start to listen and you get into the flow that Johnny kicks off, and you don't always know where it's going to go, and it kind of weaves its way around things, and then like an Agatha Christie novel, a mystery novel, it all ties together. I've never actually asked Johnny, the notes. Does he sit down with notes? And it always feels like it's a free association, and it always reaches the end zone. So almost as often as Lamar Jackson. Thanks to Johnny as always for that, and also the really. I always say, even under the circumstances, given the passing of Mort Fink, I really enjoyed, when I sit down to work on the next, the day's show coming up, the stream is playing in the headset, that's sitting by the desk. And so I hear, I keep it, it's in the background. And I so enjoy talking to Charlie LaPresti, and it's always fun, like when we have those conversations with Shug and recount career accomplishments and highlights, and the ebbs and flows of a horse's career. And it's funny, Hammer called me and he said he was listening, and as we were talking about the early career and then some of the wins, including the Clark. Hammer said, and he said, particularly when we brought up the Breeders' Cup try in the sprint. And Hammer's like, Breeders' Cup sprint? He ran in the Breeders' Cup sprint? So he pulled up the PPs, and he said, as he's looking at the PPs, he realized, because Hammer said that he kind of latched on toward the tail end of Wise Dan's exploits of his career. And Hammer said, I looked at the whole career. He said, this was like a super horse. And he said he really didn't appreciate, you know, how broad the accomplishments were. You know, then you fold in the colic surgery and coming back from that. So it was great to connect with Charlie and appreciate Mort Fink. Bringing up Hammer makes me think of something before we talk about the lineup and everything else we got to do. And it's Casey's birthday. We'll get Casey on the mic before we wrap up. Very traditional. When we get to Thanksgiving, a couple of days off that we take, invariably Casey's birthday is right on top of it. Or sometimes, you know, it's right on Thanksgiving, but kind of perfect. And certainly he's had, you know, when Johnny talked about, you know, health issues and, you know, some of the travails that we all deal with. I mean, Casey's had a very trying year and he's finishing it strong. So we'll get birthday wishes in for Case and his holiday message with another tradition here around at the races. Bringing up Hammer brings up another passing that was more or less confirmed and made widespread you know, social media postings yesterday. And it involves Hammer because of the University of Arizona, and it's actually going to lead to a double, you know, sad occasion to discuss. But Liz Bracken, who had left NYRA and moved to the University of Arizona, you know, was I won't call it retiring, but, you know, went out to Arizona and became part of the team and has to be seven years at least that she'd been part of the curriculum and you know, the teaching staff. And, you know, her long career in the game touched on a lot of areas, and most notably at NYRA, involved in the signal negotiations and the merchandising of the simulcast signal out into the world. And everyone who worked with her, who came in contact with her, thought the world of Liz Bracken. And there's just uniform sadness and plenty of dismay. And for Wendy Davis, who worked most closely with her, and everybody at the University of Arizona, I know that Wendy wasn't prepared to visit, to talk about Liz. We'll be there in 2 weeks, and we'll pay tribute appropriately to Liz Bracken. Then I could also bring in, countless people from the New York Racing Association, where she enjoyed a successful and extended career. Very sad. And for her family, who have been standing by and had, you know, been really doing their best to hold it together for Liz, who had been sick several years ago and had you know, kind of a remission, a good remission period. But as I can tell you from my own mother, It's very hard. So thoughts and sincerest sympathies to everyone who knew and cared for Liz Bracken. And that's a big number of people throughout the industry, the students, these last seven, whatever, however many years it's been. And alumni, you know, I'm sure who worked with her. And of course she could, you know, help, she helped with the symposiums because she had this gigantic Rolodex. I mean, she knew everyone. And so appropriately everyone, saddened by the news yesterday, Liz Bracken. And since we get to the Naira portion of the equation, word also came yesterday that I had not heard that Lorraine Licciardo, who had been an institution around the racing office, forever. Lorraine, as well, late last week, passed, and her best friend in the world, Carmen Barrera. I think losing Carmen near the end of the Saratoga season, that was a blow. And I know Lorraine's, I think her mother had died earlier in the year, and that was hard on her. And she was, you want to talk about central casting as a, sort of like Carmen, a kind of a slightly gruff exterior, but not really. Very, really sad to have to hear that news, and not a good. It hasn't been a good year, I'll tell you that. I mean, there's always, you know, there's always going to be, you know, these passings, but it just feels like there's been an overabundance. Maybe that's a function of getting older too. I'm sure that probably enters into the equation. So I wanted to be sure that we paid appropriate attention to the passing of Liz Bracken and Lorraine Licciardo. There is a happy story. There's a happy story that has a medical connection. And did you follow the reporting last week of Carlos Santamaria and the kidney transplant? It's just a great story. You know, he needed a kidney, and he works for Simon Callahan, and very well known for years at Santa Anita and on the Southern California circuit. And you know, he was on the watch list, and then it turned out that a friend, Susie Lavender, that she was a match. So they went to Cincinnati and had the surgery. Amazing. And it caught the national news. It ended up, I had not seen it like through the social media connections. I saw somebody had forwarded the national story that, you know, one of those make you smile, you know, happy outcomes. So it's not all sad. Tuesday before Thanksgiving always or frequently has meant the last, 4 years, celebrity chef Neil Kleinberg, highly anticipated visit. Neil will join us in the second hour. We will give you last minute, 48-hour out, Thanksgiving suggestions and some things that maybe if you're getting panic-stricken, maybe some things that, you know, are okay to buy store-bought instead of, you know, if you're feeling like you're not going to get to something. Some shortcuts, time savers, how to avoid a Thanksgiving fiasco. That's every year, that's pretty much the theme. So we'll have Neil, and I'm sure he'll regale us with a tale of a recent wagering success. Neil's one of our partners too, but he'd be betting whether he was involved or not. He loves to play. I mentioned Marcus Hirsch. We've got Andy Serling, of course, and we'll look at the last few days in New York, but also, you know, look ahead tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday, and anticipate the weekend. But, you know, the Comley and those two turf stakes we talked about with Tom Albertrani and the fall high weight and more. Todd Mostoller, hour three. John White, too. We'll do the West Coast stuff with John. Todd in to talk a little Pennsylvania and Penn National with the Wednesday action, including the Fabulous Strike. And Firenze Fire is going to run in the Fabulous Strike. Not going to run in the Fall Highway, where he would have toted 134. Marcus Hirsch starts us off, though. Thanksgiving in New Orleans. Opening day again. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com. Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Oh,
We're back at the races. Marcus Hirsch joining us, and a tradition restored in New Orleans as the fairgrounds, which for a long time, Thanksgiving was the opening day, and then they used to open around Thanksgiving, sometimes a couple of weeks earlier. It was always in proximity, but this is kind of a throwback opener on Thursday, and Marcus kind of used that as his theme on the season advance. Good morning.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Thanksgiving to you and Mrs. Hirsch.
Thank you. Same to you.
What is your wife's name?
Not Hirsch.
That's why I'm saying.
She kept her name. She has an unusual name. Her name is Keith Scherson.
Okay, because I just say the wife or it's rude. I don't like that.
Pronounced Sieve, spelled S-I-V.
Cool. I like it.
Yeah.
As someone,
eccentric parents, I guess. Fair to
well, I can respect it because I've got the unusual last name, so people find confounding.
Three letters as well.
Exactly. Exactly. No vowels. So I'd like to buy a vowel. Marcus, I've come to really enjoy, and I suppose it's because I've been down there three of the last 4 years to broadcast a week. But I've really, you and I have been talking about the fairground season for years. It really has been a very strong several years, kind of back on an upswing. There's going to be some challenges facing management this year, some pressures, that are just natural, horse racing ebbs and flows. But boy, the fairgrounds has been a font for major horses, particularly on the 3-year-old front, these last several years, particularly.
Well, Oaks and Derby winner ran there last year. The Oaks winner was based there. And what was it? I counted them up. I think it was 7 out of the last 12, I want to say, Kentucky Oaks winners had spent the had come out of fairgrounds. I mean, for whatever reason, it's just been a hotbed for 3-year-old fillies. That's interesting because the fairgrounds Oaks is the same day as the Louisiana Derby, which is, for the Kentucky Derby, an awkward placement 6 weeks out. I mean, do you run in another race or do you wait? I mean, if you run in another race, then you're kind of pushing it as far as having two races fairly close to the Derby. And if you don't, 6 weeks is kind of too long. So that's kind of an issue. I mean, in a way, it's like the three-race series there for three-year-olds is almost an entity unto itself. Like, sure, you could have a horse that wins the LeCompte Risen Star in Louisiana Derby, but that may be the heart of their first half of the season rather than the Triple Crown.
Yeah, and there's actually, and I didn't necessarily think we would start on this front, but it's just the way things kicked
off.
Sure,
you never know.
Well, talk about, in fact, the change to the whole concept, really, of the 3-year-old run up to the Louisiana Derby. I think it's very clever, and it'd be very interesting to see how it's utilized by horsemen, virtually nationwide. How many ship-ins take advantage of the way the races are going to unfold from a distance standpoint?
Oh, right. Yeah, so they've stretched things out. Excuse me. The LeCompte from a mile 7 to a mile and 16th. The Risen Star in February. LeCompte is January 18th or something. Don't quote me on that. Risen Star, a mile and 16th to a mile and 8th. And Louisiana Derby from a mile and an eighth to a mile and 3/16. And what is kind of amusing about that is Louisiana Derby used to be like the 3-year-old, the rich 3-year-old race that time of year that horses went to because it was shorter. Like, I remember when More Than Ready came to fairgrounds, it was expressly because it was a mile and a 16th, and there were other races around then were a mile and an eighth. So people used to target the race because it was shorter. Now they've gone the other direction. And lengthened everything out. And I think that's great. It speaks to a general feeling I have about American racing, is that it would be nice to have more races run at longer distances. Like, we seem to get shorter and shorter. We've got all the turf sprints now. And don't get me wrong, I'm one of the people who actually doesn't mind turf sprints at all. But, you know, if there's a specialty race on a card, it's like a 4 furlongs or some of these crazy 2 furlong races. Note to racetrack management, we have two furlong races. They're called quarter horse races. But in any case, those are at the expense of going the other direction. We don't, like at fairgrounds, they have this long stretch. They can run mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter even, you know, and start the races way down, you know, at the head of the home stretch, you know, and utilize their track that way, because they don't have a shoot, a backstretch shoot. I mean, they can only run up to 6 furlong races on dirt. And so, you know, that decision to lengthen the 3-year-old races is something that I would love to see brought in there generally into a greater, you know, mile and an eighth sort of program on the dirt. Of course, you have to have the race to fill it. For some reason, I guess, you know, horsemen are reluctant to run longer races. That's what racing officers always tell me. I mean, I find it hard to believe there's not a segment of the equine population that would benefit from having this as a fallback position on a more regular basis, but maybe I'm just mistaken.
Well, it's kind of a interesting maneuver. I mean, particularly for some of the horses that, you know, that are crying out for, you know, for distances closer to, you know, to the mile and a quarter. And I mean, the same day, usually the same day or within a week, the World Cup, some years, right? Some years, the Louisiana Derby is the same.
Yeah, the same. Now it's usually a week apart. Yeah.
So they're running a mile and 3/16 in the UAE Derby.
Right. No, that's true. You know, it makes good sense to me. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a game changer. I mean, I don't think it's going to like fundamentally alter the structure of their series or that race. But I do think that maybe you get one or two more horses, and maybe even of more prominence to connections, you know, really want to add it distance. I don't know. But I mean, the thing is, like, good, try things. Like, we don't try enough different things. Tracks generally just aren't as willing to experiment as they should be. And anytime people are willing to innovate, even on a kind of miniature scale like this, I think it's a positive. I think it's just a good trend for racing generally to try to broaden one's mind and see that there are a multiplicity of ways to do things that haven't yet been fully considered or implemented.
Well, of course, no matter what they do at fairgrounds, and no matter how many races they run, how many maiden special weights, how many turf races, Brad Cox is going to win 53 races and Joe Sharp 49.
Well, it's only been 2 years, to be fair, but I actually didn't remember that, and I was looking up stats for a couple of years, and I refreshed the database a couple of times, like, wait, I just looked up that year, and not realizing that those two people had the same win total last season and the previous season. I see no reason to think that things aren't going to be similar. I mean, I'm not predicting 53-49, but Cox has already entered a bunch of horses, Sharp a few less, but those are two operations that are going to be prominently featured throughout the season. I don't think there's going to be any major shakeup in who has what sort of horses and wins X number of races. Obviously, there will be marginal differences through the course of the meet, but they don't have any major new outfits. I don't believe they lost any outfits. And I don't think anyone has radically changed their approach to this season.
The vagary that Fairgrounds has had to deal with, of course, is winter weather. And there's going to be a rainy season. There's nothing that can stop that. And some years it's wreaked havoc. You did mention how, you know, the new drainage that was finally addressed has really made a difference. And some of those periods where you couldn't use the turf 4 days after rain, that is over with. The course at least is, you know, responded nicely to the renovation. So they just have to live through whatever wet weather comes along.
Sure. And, you know, that's a great differentiator between Fairgrounds and Oaklawn, which I suppose is their regional competition, although Oaklawn's purses are roughly 100% higher, I think. But they don't have a turf course. At least they don't have a turf course yet. And Fairgrounds has a really nice turf course. So, you know, they don't have, it's not huge. It's not this super wide course where you can move the rail all over the place and just, you know, beat the crap out of it and run all these races. They have to be careful and protect it. And reasonably so. It's a long season. November, December, January, February, March. I mean, that's a long time to be running turf races over a place where grass doesn't even naturally grow. But, you know, the course is good. The course is fair. And what I love about tracks like Churchill and Hawthorne and Fairgrounds, where you've got a really long home stretch by American standards, especially in grass races and stuff, it just gives horses a chance to sort themselves out and get out of trouble and find ways through. And I much prefer a situation where you've got enough straightaway that the race isn't essentially over off the turn. If you get in one spot of trouble, you can just forget about it. Also, you know, that course used to be a big outside closers course, and that hasn't been the case at all. I mean, it's been fair, and speed has been fine on occasion. It's just, you know, you monitor it as it goes along, but there isn't the sort of general trend that we used to see there before they did all the maintenance that was overdue at 16.
The challenge that we were referencing, and you wrote about it too, and you're hinting, of course, about Oaklawn, which now starts later in January, but will then, you know, get any number of horses, Cox and Asmussen, and, you know, quite a few people will be shipping over or sending horses to Hot Springs. But the circumstance up in Kentucky is a new wrinkle, and that is the, you know, the reborn purse structure at Turfway and how many horses might stay home. Then you think about the, you know, the lower levels, and there's options at Delta. You address that. So there is some demand for horses, but yet, you know, last year they kept pulling. You know, some of those pressures were still around, were there. Turfway is the new wrinkle this year. But, you know, Steve Jones has managed, or Scott Jones, I should say, managed to, you know, keep pulling rabbits out of a hat. I mean, the cards, whenever you and I talked last year about Big Saturdays, we were always impressed about how, you know, how good the fields were and how competitive the racing was.
Yeah. No, that's true. And we'll see what happens. I haven't done any research, but I would imagine that Turfway might have more of an impact in future years. I'm guessing that it's not going to be a big chunk out of Fairgrounds' pie this season, but after, you know, they have a year and then people get to formulate plans for the next year, there could be some pressures on that. I do have a feeling there would be other outfits that would occupy any stalls that went unused because of a shift that direction. And also, Fairgrounds does draw a lot of horses from training centers around Louisiana, and central Louisiana in particular, the Lafayette area. There are a lot of horses floating around, and you get a lot of Louisiana-bred races, but that's fine as long as they can, you know, have decent-sized fields. I don't think you can really underestimate the pressure that gets put on Fairgrounds, and I guess I should be a little more, generous toward Delta's position too, because they feel the same way. But I mean, I feel like in Delta's in Benton, Fairgrounds is in New Orleans. Fairgrounds is obviously the more important, chink in the entire, you know, racing fence around the country. But to run two meets in the state concurrently, you know, through the entire winter, even with a fairly large horse population in the state and a lot of Louisiana breeds, I mean, that is asking a lot. And you're putting a big dent in what Fairgrounds can do by having a competitor 3 hours away, taking away a lot of horses that are still what could be considered a lot of tracks, bread and butter races at the lower levels. I mean, Scott Jones, who you referenced, who's the racing secretary under Director of Racing, Jason Goulet, he said the same thing. They struggled with lower level claimers last year. Those races just aren't filling that well, and it's going to be the same this year because on the one side you've got Delta, and on the other you've got a huge bottom end course structure at Oaklawn. I mean, if somebody has stalls at both Oaklawn and Fairgrounds, you know, they're probably going to run their 6250 claimer at Oaklawn.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I should point out, Steve, that and Scott made this point, and it's true. They have run a huge number of maiden special weight races and allowance races at fairgrounds the last couple of years. That has kind of become their niche. They do have a lot of serial things, and maybe that's directly related to what we talked about at the start with the success that three-year-old fillies and colts have had going north of Kentucky. Is that you're talking about a pretty deep pool to begin with. I think you said they ran 124 main special weight races. That includes older too, but if you consider that a good proportion of those would be two-year-old races. And I mean, I think that is, people like that racing surface. I'm not a trainer and I'm not a surfaces expert, but for a long time, perhaps less so now than back in the day, but even still, a lot of people really love training their horses on that surface. They get a good, consistent, sound, kind surface and a really good place to winter a two-year-old. And I think that we see the effects of that. And if you think that you have a really good horse for like the entire year or 2 years or 3 years, I mean, running for $40,000 more in one day doesn't make as much sense as you're talking about, like with a horse you just claimed and you want a quick return. Like the rewards you're going to reap down the road from keeping the horse on a track that you feel comfortable with and in a consistent environment, those are going to be greater over the long term than running for more money at one occasion. I do think, I mean, Atherton himself, you know, just has, and Cox too, they got a lot of good young horses. They can't all run against each other all the time, so you're going to get some at all the different places. And I think we're going to see that again this season too. Love to see, like, this time of year and in December when they can get a lot of two-year-old maidens to go and get horses to win those races and then get the allowance races to go. It's really important to get that program started so that you get the horses that are, you know, properly prepared to go into the LeCompte and the Silver Bolt Day and races like that after the first of the year. And, I mean, the summer card that they've created, too, I hesitate to even say the name because I don't like it. It's a bunch of state synthesis on December 21st. But that has become okay, too. I would love to see those races have six-figure purses, all of them. They bumped the Thanksgiving up to $100,000 this year, which is good for them. And they did make some marginal increases in the regular, the non-graded stakes, too. So that's a good start. But as I was saying, like the Sugar Bowl, Letelier, I know Hog Creek Hustle, he's a good horse. He ran in the Sugar Bowl. There were several good horses in that race last year. And, Taraz, is that the name of the Brad Cox filly that ran so well first out at Churchill?
Yes. Maybe.
Yeah. She's going to run in the Letelier, probably, Cox said yesterday. All I'm saying is that they have, that program can help, you know, get things going forward to the January-February card. And that's all part of a good structure. And you referenced, you know, but Jones and the racing department have done well. And I think that some strides have been made in those areas. And that, with young horses, third horses getting ready for route races, even turf too. I mean, they've had a more robust program in that area, no huge purses or anything. But that's the place where they can really thrive. And I expect to see that again this year.
You know, should mention, too, a couple of things that as I was doing some travel on Sunday, Marcus, I was planning my, you know, my season of, you know, where I was going to go and when.
Yeah.
And so when I, you know, the last couple of years after NHC, the timing has been perfect to come to New Orleans for Risen Star. So I go to look at the flights, and the flights were like, $500. I'm like, what is going? And then I realized right away. Said, oh no. It just so happens.
Mardi Gras is Risen Star this year?
Yes.
Oh boy. That's the trouble for me too. I might have to drive.
Well, there's the hotels and just every other inconvenience and mayhem that comes along with. On every trip that I've gone for Risen Star, and that's three of the last 4 years, it's been right before or right after. And this time it's the weekend of. So
have you been to the Mardi Gras?
No. No, thank you.
Really? No, thank you.
I'll go to some. No, I not, you know, years ago. Yeah, maybe years ago.
You don't like a good parade, huh?
Well, the parades I like. That part, I'm happy to go see the crews, but the actual 3 days, the Bacchanalia, I think.
You're not going to drop a bunch of acid and dress up in a flamingo costume, is what you're telling me.
Not anymore.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know what? If Tina wants to go, we will do it. And I suppose it is something that you should do at least once.
Yeah, I mean, I used to spend the whole winter there, so that used to be part of my life. I mean, I was never that into it, but it's some parts of it are interesting.
It's a spectacle.
Well, I want nothing to do with the Bourbon Street scene or anything like that.
Yeah.
Hard pass for me, I guess.
Well, we should also note, in addition to making sure everybody realizes that, you know, not only was there the Derby Oaks winners that ran there, but the horse of the year, the likely horse of the year, Bricks and Mortar, right on didn't he win the Muniz?
Wait, did he run in that race, or did he run in the Fairgrounds? Yeah, I guess he did.
I think he did.
He wouldn't have run in the Fairgrounds handicap because that was too... Anyway, yeah, he barely beat an inferior horse. He did run there. Speaking of handicaps...
They're over with.
There are no handicaps at Fairgrounds anymore. That means New Orleans handicap is now called the New Orleans Classic. Same with the Thanksgiving handicap. Anyway, so that's fine. I'm if you're not going to do handicaps properly, and we don't, because we don't properly differentiate between top and bottom, then just do away with them. I think it's much better that way.
I don't disagree. Weight for age, and you know, I don't have any argument with it. The other names that I had made a note of,
mm-hmm.
that you talked about the Colony, you know, yeah, I will take issue. There was one jock who you did not include in your Colony list.
Okay.
Where's Miguel Mena?
Oh, well, I mean, I just listed the top of the standings. Miguel was there.
All
but
right,
he didn't. Yeah. He ended up. He
got hurt.
So many races. Yeah.
He'll
do fine. He's there at the start, and I know he's going to have a good meet. Will he be in the top five? Questionable. Anyway, I think Miguel is going to. He has come back. I thought he was riding well the times I had seen him, and he did have a really bad injury. I mean, he was hurt terribly. And a long time coming back, and great. I mean, I've known him for quite a while, and I'm not claiming that he's a close friend, but I enjoy speaking to him, and I appreciate his perspective, and I always am happy when he does well. And if he is a leading rider and wants to tell me what an idiot I was for not mentioning his name, I will just happily take that.
I always put a plug in. I he's one of my favorites, one of my absolute favorites out there. Well, looking forward, Marcus, and hopefully we'll cross paths again at Fairgrounds. When's your first trip in?
I will be there for the card that shall not be named on the 21st.
will you spend Christmas? You going to spend Christmas down there?
No, I'm going to. I've lots of travel. I'll be going to Hong Kong on Sunday for the 8th KIR.
Yeah,
excited about that. Just getting to see all the guy again makes a 16-hour flight worthwhile. Then December at Fairgrounds, January at Fairgrounds, February at Fairgrounds. I'll be there, God willing, for all of those major stakes. Looking forward to. I've handicapped the first couple of cars. The opening week product, I think, is well worth anyone's time. The race is filled well. Lots of interesting horses running, and so far, so good.
Excellent. You got a opening day best bet?
Opening day? Well, I made my best bet. I don't remember, actually, Steven. A couple days ago.
All right. No, I know. That was like a week ago, you probably, because the one thing that they do that everybody loves is draw early. I love how early they draw their cards.
Well, that's state law. I mean, they have to draw, the tracks have to draw at least 7 days out of Louisiana. And I agree. The horsemen protested at first, and I think pretty much everyone's used to it. And it's great to see those cards up there. Gives you plenty of time to get a feel for it.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, DRF Hirsch, and your coverage of the fairgrounds. And we'll check in with Marcus on a regular basis. And I can also tell everybody, as Marty McGee joins us, I can tell everybody that, because I'm pulling it up, Marcus, so that I can remind everybody, your play comes... Oh, frankincense in the eighth in that second level allowance.
That's what, my best bet.
Yeah, that's your dark type. Yeah.
Huh.
15
I
to one.
Remember that at all? Handicap.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I thought I had made it in the stakes race. Maybe I clicked the wrong button, but frankincense is an interesting best bet. That's more like best long shot, but we.
There you go. That's fine.
That's
all right. Mitch Merle with Chris Davis and Bobby's Wicked One.
Bobby's in the Wicked One is who I thought I had made that horse the best bet, but maybe something went amiss. Bobby's Wicked One is not going to be 15th one. I'll tell you that.
No, he will be probably 6-5 or even money.
Yeah, probably about that.
With Miguel Mena. I love it.
Yeah. No, a regular around the stall barn. It's good business from that outfit.
Very much. Marcus, thanks so much. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You too, Steve.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. And we'll stay right here and close out the hour talking about another track opening, which is the little track that could. As we like to say, and Mrs. Thayer's Tampa Bay Downs, Marty McGee joins us. Good morning.
Vic, oh, you got me on my kind of my day off, Vic. But yeah.
Oh, come on. Yeah, there's no day. Come
I'm
on.
Not talking to you on a Tuesday. So yeah.
Well, there's a lot of Marty McGee things happening. There's the Kentucky Derby Future Wager Pool One. And that's a Marty McGee thing.
Well, I've done it every year. I've written all the stuff for the forum since they started it in 1999. So, yeah.
Anyway, how many of these have you cashed is the question.
I hardly ever play it. All right. I told you I bet on Elite Mercedes in like the first or second year, and he ended up running for a nickel about 2 years later. So, yeah. It was Elliot. That's how long ago Elliot Walden trained him. So, yeah.
That says a lot. to give us a quick glance, let's talk about the future wager, which opens on Thursday, closes on Sunday, and there's pool one of the future, but there's also the only pool that they'll run for the sire wager, which has become kind of fun and a nice little added wrinkle.
Yeah, they haven't had much handle on this sire thing. I think they got 40-something thousand last year, but it is a. You know, it's the kind of thing that that I think a lot of the breeding people here in Kentucky get a kick out of, just kind of seeing what it is. Last year we had, Looking at Lucky, of course, was the sire of the Derby winner Country House, and he was part of the field. But I'm pretty sure that was the first time in I think they've had it four times now, that the field horse, I'm pretty sure that was the first time a field horse won it, but the field is listed as 4-1 for the Sire's Future, and then the next is Constitution at 6-1, and I think everybody else is 10-1 or higher. But yeah, that's pretty typical. And then in the regular pool one, and as you mentioned, it's a 4-day window. It's the only 4-day window. They just kind of take advantage of Thanksgiving being part of that. And I think, Steve, this is maybe I don't know how many years they've been doing this, maybe 6 or 7. Where they've reached all the way back into late November as opposed to starting the futures in late January or early February as they had done in all the prior years. But the field, which is always closed as the pool one favorite, is 6-5 on the morning line. Last year, Country House was still a maiden at this time. So he, of course, was part of the field. I think it paid 460 or so on a win bet. But there are exactas, which they added a few years ago, and that makes it a little more interesting if you want to dive in.
Yeah, it's always, you know, it's always worth looking. Sunday afternoon, you take a look, and there might be a horse that it somehow slips through the cracks. And, you know, as later on, as we move into, you know, into the meat of the Derby trail season, there's invariably, you know, some horses that are out of sight, out of mind. You know, in this case, we've got, you know, the ones that are going to run this weekend, like Tis the Law, that'll come diving down should they win. And in fact, since that came up, Marty, and before we talk Tampa and before we talk about the Clark and the Fall City and the Cardinal, et cetera, some thoughts about the field coming together for the Kentucky Jockey Club?
Well, I mean, maybe Tis the Law can win the Eclipse Award if he runs off the screen like he did in the Champagne.
Yeah.
Barkley Tag, you know, has kind of taken a little angle on this, elected to skip the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, which almost anybody with a four-length Champagne winner would have run in. Maybe he would have won that and clinched it then, but, you know, who knows. So he's going to be a pretty solid favorite in there. The only other pool one horse that we know of is South Bend, who's running in there, and he's unbeaten in three starts, all of them by a neck or so. But he's obviously a nice colt for Sagamore and Stan Huff. And, I think Asmussen has a horse in there, the Silver Prospector he's running. So they enter tomorrow for the two-year-old stakes here on Saturday, those being the Kentucky Jockey Club and the Goldenrod. And their Derby and Oaks qualifying points races, as well as, you know, meaningful races in their own right. So it's a very eventful week we got coming up here at Churchill.
Very much so, and we'll look forward to those fields. They're always important, and there's always, you know, between the allowances and the maiden races, it should be terrific. Anything notable about the Goldenrod? I haven't even looked at the nominations for that.
Finite, the horse that won the
the
Rags to Riches by six, Rasmussen. She's running back, and I'm trying to remember who else we got, but. We had a plane load come in from New York yesterday, including a couple of Chad horses for, besides Tis the Law, a couple of Chad horses for the Mrs. Revere, which is the co-feature on Friday before the Clark. So that's going to be a good race. We've got a field of 14 in there. So, you know, like I said, a bunch of good stuff happening here.
Well, and on that topic, you got any thoughts about the stakes that – we're going to be off tomorrow and Thursday, and the Fall City and nice group in there. I thought that the two Curlin, Sally's Curlin and Milady Curlin, also Rakowski for Brian Lynch. And in fact, you know, the Brian Lynch situation, you know, you wrote about it. I talked to Brian. You know, there's several other contaminations from the same day, and this is clearly a contamination, but Brian was not going to screw around with legal challenges and lawyers and everything else, so he just took the 15 days.
Yeah, like you said, he's serving it, I think, December 15th to the 29th. And, you know, there's always a story behind those stories, Steve. I've dealt with the stewards for many years on these kind of stories whereby there are mitigating circumstances. That's part of the reason Brian gets to probate half of his 30 days. He's only going to serve 15, but, you know, tough situation. Common sense, I think the medication he was penalized for is an anticonvulsant that people use for neuropathic pain, and it just doesn't make sense to give that to a horse. So like you said, there's always some kind of story that you would think would make the trainer look innocent in a case like that, but no. So they got to go by the rules. But anyway, so Brian is, what else? What were we talking about before Brian?
Well, the stake and the Fall City with the two Curlins, yeah. Sally's Curlin and Milady yeah. Curlin, who are coming out of the Chalukey, and they hook up again. But this is two turns rather than the one turn. You got your brothers and Sam Siegel's horse. Go Google yourself that, you know, certainly would benefit. If Radikowski can't run, does she run or does she have to come out now?
Oh, no, she's in. She gets
okay.
His penalty doesn't start until December 15th.
Okay.
So he's good to go until then.
Got it.
I mean, she's the obvious pace setter in there. I don't know if she can go that far. This is her first time against not New York breds, you know, in open company. And she's a five-year-old. She started her career, obviously, very late earlier this year at five. And I just think that my brother's horse, Go Google Yourself, and the Brad Cox horse, My Lady Curlin, they're going to get good trips from right in behind her. So I think one of those are good enough, they're going to go on with it.
Well, in addition, of course, they'll also run the Cardinal on the grass. And free and clear now, right, after the crazy storm, weather's nice.
Yeah, but I think we're getting more rain today or
Oof.
Later today and tomorrow. And then it's supposed to be pretty clear on Thursday and Friday, I think. And then maybe some more over the weekend. But, I think two or three of the 5 days last week we were off the grass just because it's just been kind of dank and wet and everything else here.
How about the Clark? Before we talk about Tampa, Marty, what did you make your picks in for Friday? Must be.
Yeah, I picked the favorite in there, but, man, it is a good race. I've been working on it this morning. You know, you got Bravazo coming back for his first start from the Pegasus, so that's 10 months. If Lucas can win this one, man, what a feat that would be. But I do have Tom Stay Todd picked. He is 8-5 on the morning line. Then you've got Mr. Freeze as the second choice at 5-1. Seeking the Sole third at 6-1. I was looking up the history of a lot of these trainers in the racers. Nobody has more than one horse in the field of 12. And 8 of the 12 trainers have already won the race, but Lucas is the only one to have done it more than once. So
how about that?
You got guys like Dale won it with Shackelford. Brad Cox won it last year with Leofric. Asmussen won it with Gunrunner. And John Kimmel even won it with, I think his name was Premium Tap back in 90.
Absolutely Premium Tap. You
yeah,
bet.
It was 2006 with the DeSormo up. So, yeah, it's a very interesting race. And then, of course, 10 years ago was Blame for Al Stahl, who has Thompson Cotton here. And then the following year was when Blame came back and won the Breeders' Cup Classic here.
That's amazing. You know, I talked to Lopresti yesterday. We talked about Mr. Fink. And, you know, he's taking a shot with fact-finding in there, too.
Yeah, he is. And Charlie would have won it twice in a row, but Successful Dan got taken down. And,
yep.
And what I think was really a bad call.
Yep.
My brother had two horses in there, and they were part of the – I think they kind of caused the log jam that made for a huge crowding around the eighth pole. And Charlie's horse was victimized, I thought, from the steward stand. He'd probably still wear a yacht talking about that one. But then he came back and got his Clark the next year with the great, truly great Wise Dan in 2011.
Marty, you also wrote the advance for the season opener and for the season at Tampa Bay Downs. And Tampa kicks off tomorrow. And looking forward to Tampa back on the betting menu.
Yeah. Remember last year, Bick, I picked the cold pick 5. I paid $10,000. I was just too busy with Churchill to even bet it. But yeah. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
It's really a melting pot of a lot of places. And I think a lot of Steve Chris is one who really enjoys betting on Tampa. And
Andy, too. Byard does, too.
Yeah, I don't know why. There's got to be a story behind this story why the purses aren't any bigger. You got maiden specials. If you don't have a Florida bred, you're running for a mere $20,000. And the allowance races are I think, $22,500, which includes Florida bred bonuses. So they have handled more than $4 million a day for the last 2 or 3 years, I believe. And I know that a lot of those guys just the trainers go down there, they're just sucking it up and knowing they're going to go down there and lose money because of the cost of living and traveling, et cetera. But even with those purses, you get some terrific racing there. You get the Chads and the Todds and the Motts shipping over.
Motion Grand Motion?
Yeah. Running a whole bunch of, particularly over the grass course.
Yep.
And then, of course, they have the two big days, the Sam Davis, which I think is February 8th this year, and then the Tampa Bay Derby, which is on March the 7th. And they're Derby qualifying points races and surrounded by real good stakes. So we always look forward to being there for those big days.
Well, I do as well. I'll probably be there for Tampa Bay Derby again. I was looking at my scheduling, and looks like Tampa, the Derby weekend looks right. A couple of new faces and an old face will be back. Tom Proctor is back after missing a few years. I see where you wrote that Gary Contessa and Tim Gleishaw took strings to Tampa as well. And I'll give you a jock's name that you included. Harry Hernandez, who has spent time at Finger Lakes, among other places, I think is a terrific little rider. And watch for Harry Hernandez. I bet you he'll end up on some long prices that he'll boot home.
Yeah, Contessa said he's taking 10. Gleishaw said he's taking everything. He used to go to fairgrounds, but he's taking whatever he's got now down there. And then the Jockey Colony, I believe 11 of the top 12 I counted up. Only Declan Cannon, who was like ninth last year, he's staying here to ride a Turfway. His wife's going to have a baby. And, obviously the Turfway purses are going to be much better than they have been in years since Churchill just bought them. But, the Tampa Colony is tough. You've got Gallardo and Sammy Camacho and Centeno. And it's tough. Let's say this. The purses are not commensurate with the caliber of racing, in my opinion.
Now, it's for those that have never been, put it on your list. It's go over to the West Coast. It's really pleasant, and once you go, you'll go on a regular basis. Everybody loves Tampa, and I'm sure Rich Averill will buy everybody lunch if you go. I used to be able to say Satish. Satish would buy everybody lunch, but he's not there. He only goes once or twice now a year. So Rich Averill's the new Satish.
Yeah, I went with Averill to the Ed, which is, you know what the Ed is? Last spring, it's the Ed Smith Stadium in Sarasota. We went to an Orioles Pirates game there.
Nice.
And Richie, he's got Gerald Bennett, who's been dominating the standings there the last 4 or 5 years. That's his trainer. But, Tampa, it reminds me of the old River Downs. Just a nice place to go and spend the day and really soak it all in and enjoy it.
We enjoyed visiting with Marty. Got a chance to get ahead of the Kentucky Derby future wager and all the action at Churchill, as well as the kickoff to Tampa. Marty, happy Thanksgiving. Talk soon.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot. Same to you.
The one and only, Marty McGee. Let's take a break. Top of the hour, Andy Serling's going to join us, and later, Neil Kleinberg, Todd Mostoller, John White. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's BYK to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest.
and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Dick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 5 minutes into hour two on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Andy Serling joins us, and the Thanksgiving week, we used to call it kind of holiday fest. It's spread out now, goes into December with the Cigar Mile, but some very good racing continues at Aqueduct starting tomorrow.